Please turn with me to the letter to the Colossians, chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. I'll read from verse 1. If then you were raised with Messiah, seek those things which are above, where Messiah is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Messiah in God. When Messiah, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. May God bless that portion from his word. Just one more, we will recap. We see in verses 1 and 2, seek those things which are above. And in verse 2, set your mind on things above. Not only seek, but set. There's one more thing that one has to say about that. I mentioned that as God bids us to do his will, with the bidding comes the enabling. He gives us the power to do it. Remember what the Lord Yeshua said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. What he's saying there is, yoke up with me. I don't expect you to lead this supernatural life in your own strength. You cannot do it. You have to team up with me. Take my yoke upon you. And a yoke always was for two animals. Pairs of oxen were used to plow. And that's the picture the Lord is using. You and me together. So that when we come across these commands in the word, these precepts, we are entitled to turn to God and say, Lord, I cannot begin to do what you tell me to do. I can only do it with your enabling and in your strength, in total dependence upon you. That needs to be stressed. And then we saw also in verse 3, you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Someone may say, well, I feel very much alive. Yes, you are physically. But there's another life that is the real life. This physical life is merely the outward demonstration of the true, of the real inward life, which is the spiritual life. And when he says here, you died to the old evil ways. You died to sin. You died to the old life. You died to human ordinances. All these things that are fleshly and that drag you down and that hinder your progress to heaven. You died to those things and you have life. But that life is hidden with Messiah in God. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and we'd see how this works. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 22 and 23. For as in Adam all die, even so in Messiah all shall be made alive, but each one in his own order. Messiah, the first fruits, afterward those who are Messiahs at his coming. What is said here is, when you and I are born into this world, we are born as sons and daughters of Adam. And because we are descended from Adam, we inherit his sinful nature and the condemnation that goes with it. And that condemnation is no less than spiritual death, separation from God. But when you are born again, you are no longer in Adam. You are now the people of Messiah. And in him, all shall be made alive. That word all obviously refers to all that belong to him. Because in verse 23 we read, each one in his own order, Messiah, the first fruits, afterward those who are Messiahs at his coming. In everybody, all of us, when we are born into this world, we are born in Adam. But when we are born again, we are in Messiah as our second Adam. The first man is of the earth, earthly. The second man is the Lord from heaven. Not everyone is born again, but everyone is born. Everyone partakes of the first birth, not everyone partakes of the second. And what Shaul is saying here is, your life is hidden with him in God. He is now the head of his redeemed people, just as Adam was the head of his fallen people. Hid with Messiah. It's no longer earthly and sensual. In one of the Psalms, God speaks about God's people and he describes them like this: your hidden ones. God's people are called God's hidden ones. And John puts it like this. He says, behold what manner of love, it's in first letter of John chapter 3, behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called children of God. Therefore the world does not know us because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. God's people are hidden. They're hidden from the eyes of this world. Their identity is not known. I remember even before I was saved, I was invited by a Christian couple to go to their church and hear a missionary from the Congo. Mr. Burton, his name was. And I remember he made a remark at which people chuckled. I didn't understand it because I was not a believer. He said, the people of Exeter did not realize that someone with royal blood was walking on their sidewalks. What he meant was, he was walking up and down the town, looking at the various sites, and he said, I am of royal blood. I have heavenly pedigree. But the people who rubbed shoulders with me and passed me in the street had no idea. And that's why John says, the world doesn't know us, doesn't recognize us for what we are or for who we are, because neither did they recognize him. So it's no great matter if it doesn't recognize us. But God calls us hidden, as the flower is hidden in the seed, as the fruit is hidden in the blossoms. In the Song of Solomon, he describes his bride like this: my dove, who are in the cleft of the rock. The imagery there is very powerful. It's a rock that has been cleft, split. It reminds us of that rock that Moses struck in the desert. It split and brought out water to quench the thirst of the people of Israel. But also that term rock in the Tanakh is always used of God. When the Lord Yeshua says in Matthew, on this rock I will build my church, he was referring to himself as God the Son. He is the foundation of the church, not Peter, as some people would have us believe. God speaks to his bride, the bridegroom speaks to his bride. He says, O my dove that art in the cleft of the rock. She is hidden in the cleft rock, the rock that has been split for her. That's a picture of Messiah wounded to death on Golgotha for the sins of the world. And we hide in him. We are hidden in him. This is the picture used here. You died and your life is hidden with Messiah in God. We have other pictures of what it means to be hidden in God. When we turn back to the Psalms, we see in Psalm 91 that the true child of God hides in God. Do you remember that famous hymn, Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee? The author of that, Toplady, was overtaken by a storm, a heavy rainstorm, and he looked for somewhere to hide, and he saw a cliff that was split, and he could dart into the opening of that huge rock and shelter himself from the rain. And that experience inspired him to write that hymn, Rock of Ages, cleft for me. In Psalm 91, we are hiding in God. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust. Hiding in God, hiding in Thee, as the chorus goes to another hymn. You died and your life is hidden with Messiah in God. Your life is hidden. It's not apparent and obvious yet, but it is hidden in God. Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 20, Moses says as much in other words. Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 20. That you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey His voice, and that you may cling to Him. For He is your life and the length of your days. God is our life. Every child of God has, as one man of God put it, the life of God in the soul of men. What a tremendous thing. You and I have the life of God in us, and God demonstrated it only once in a most dramatic way. We read in the second book of Kings that Elisha, the prophet, died and he was buried. He was put in a tomb. Long after his death, there were some men burying a friend, and they saw a band of marauders appearing over the horizon, and they wanted to flee, but they wanted to dispose of the body of their dead friend. And it happened that they were close by the tomb of Elisha, so they cast their dead friend into the tomb of Elisha, and immediately that dead man touched the bones of Elisha. He revived and stood on his feet. Why did God do that? He did it only once. Why did He do it? The answer is, He wanted to show that the life of God is in us, and that whether we live or die, we are the Lord's, and He demonstrated that His power still was there in the bones of Elisha. Your life is hidden with Messiah in God. The Lord Yeshua put it like this in His high priestly prayer, John 17. John chapter 17, verse 21. That they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. God is in us. We are in God as believers. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us. Well, our life is hidden now, but it's not going to remain hidden. In verse 4, the Word of God tells us, when Messiah, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. When He came the first time, there was no beauty in Him that we should desire Him. Nobody saw in Him any glory except those with eyes to see, who said, we beheld His glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. When Messiah, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. Above, he says in verse 3, your life is hidden with Messiah. And now in verse 4, he says, Messiah is our life. Isaiah chapter 9. Look at Isaiah chapter 9. In Isaiah chapter 9, there's a promise of the end of darkness. It's remarkable that the Lord led Caroline to choose that song we have just been singing, because here it is. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. Isaiah speaking about the end of the dark night of suffering and of misery and of spiritual death. Verse 1 says, nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed, as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan in Galilee of the Gentiles. It's first of all directed to the people of Israel. But what he has to say here is a message for the whole world. You and I are partakers of his promise in Messiah through the gospel. And all those that believe and obey the gospel are partakers of these gospel promises. The people who walked in darkness, that's us once upon a time. I hope it's in the past tense for every one of us. Have seen a great light. Those who dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. Why? And through whom? We read in verse 6, skipping over the intervening verses. Verse 6, here is the reason. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. And the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. He is our life. He's called there Mighty God, Everlasting Father. We see his deity there. Messiah is our life, and he is going to appear. When Messiah, who is our life, shall be manifested. This is referring to the return of the Messiah. There are two comings, two major comings of the Messiah. The first coming, when he came to die for sinners. The second coming, when he comes to gather to himself those for whom he died. Two comings. I say two major comings because in the Tanakh we find he came many times to his people before his actual birth in Bethlehem. As the angel of the Lord, he appears to Abraham. He appears to Isaac. He appears to Jacob. He appears to Moses and Joshua. He appears to some of the people in the days of the Judges. He appears to Isaiah the prophet in chapter 6. He appears to Jeremiah, etc., etc. He comes. And one of the titles of the Messiah in Revelation chapter 1 is, who is and who was, that is, who is today, what I was yesterday, and who is to come. In the sense of, and who is the coming one. Not will be. I used to think it meant who is and who was and who will be. No, that's not what the Greek tells me. It says who is and who was and who is the coming one. That is a title of the Messiah, the coming one. And wherever we read about a major responsibility being laid upon us, it's always put in the light of the coming of the Messiah. For example, You have need of patience, that after you have done the will of God, you might inherit the promise. And what is it that motivates us? The very next verse says, for he that shall come, and will not tarry. Over and again, the second coming of the Messiah is used as the primary motive for our obedience and for our faithfulness. Just have a look throughout the scriptures as you read the New Covenant scriptures. You'll find over and again the return of Messiah is used as the motive for our following him and for not losing heart. Here it is too. Seek those things which are above. Set your mind on things above, because he is coming back. And with him, he brings his rewards. His reward is with him, says Isaiah the prophet, and his work is before him. That's found in Isaiah 62. First his work, then his reward. And his reward is with him after his work has been done, and he will come to reward each one of us according to what we have done. He shall be manifested. In Malachi the prophet, chapter 4 and verse 2, God says that Messiah is going to be manifested. Malachi 4, verse 2. But to you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings, and you shall go out and grow fat like stall-fed calves. The Son of Righteousness will arise to you who fear my name. He's called Shemesh Tzedakah, the Son of Righteousness. Then, says our text, you also will appear with him in glory. Not only us, but others, countless others with us, caught up together in a glad surprise. Daniel the prophet mentions this in his 12th chapter. Daniel the prophet, chapter 12, verse 2 and 3. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. You also. Can we put our name there? Can we say, me too? I hope so. Manifested with him as the captain of our salvation. And we're going to be glorified together. Manifested together with him. Let's look at a prophetic psalm which describes this so vividly, and that's the 50th psalm. Psalm 50. Psalm 50. This is a prophetic psalm. Psalms were not just songs. They were testimonies, they were prophecies, and they were real life experiences put down for our learning. In this case, it's a prophecy, and it describes the coming of the Messiah for judgment, but also to receive his people. Psalm 50, verse 1. The mighty one, and immediately, the word for mighty is Gibor. That's one of the titles of the Messiah in Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Gibor, the mighty one. It is the Messiah. Gibor, El Gibor. It's a play on that name. The mighty one, God the Lord, has spoken and called the earth from the rising of the sun to its going down. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God will shine forth. There are two Zions mentioned in the scriptures. the earthly Zion, which is Jerusalem, and the heavenly Jerusalem, which is called the heavenly Zion, the mother of us all. It's this that is spoken of here. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God will shine forth. Our God shall come and shall not keep silent. A fire shall devour before him, and it shall be very tempestuous all around him. He shall call to the heavens from above and to the earth, that he may judge his people. Gather my saints together to me, those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Let the heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Selah. That's a picture of Messiah coming back. He's described in Thessalonians as coming with flaming fire. Vengeance. But what does he do? He calls to the heavens, first of all, gather my saints together to me. Those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Last week we were observing the Seudah. We were celebrating the blood sacrifice of our Messiah. The covenant he has made with us. We reaffirmed our part in that covenant. We subscribed to it as we took the emblems, the matzah and the grape juice. He said, yes, I give my hand. I put my signature again to that covenant. I am my Lord's and he is mine. Forever and forever. And I seal that covenant afresh with these emblems. That's what is meant by the Seudah. And God's speaking about his people, those that have, who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. We shall be manifested together with him. When Zechariah described the return of the Messiah in his 14th chapter, Zechariah chapter 14, he also speaks in similar words. Zechariah 14, verse 4 and 5. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it toward the south. Then you shall flee through my mountain valley, for the mountain valley shall reach to Azal. Yes, you shall flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Thus the Lord my God will come, and all the saints with you. All the saints with him. When Messiah, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. He'll catch us up. The doctrine of the rapture is not only found in the Greek, the Hebrew, in the New Covenant scriptures. We're given two prototypes in the Tanakh. There was Enoch. He was not, for God took him. That was a prototype of the rapture. And then there was Elijah, whom God took up in a whirlwind. Now, for those misguided people who think the unmarried state is more holy than the married state, let me remind you that two men were caught up. One was married and one was not. So that marriage makes no difference at all to your sanctity. That marriage is holy and ordained by God. Just that's just by the by. We see him coming. But the last phrase, you also will appear with him in glory. This is also a promise that is found in the prophetical Psalms. Look at Psalm 45. And while we're turning there, remember that we have a preview of this when Moses and Elijah appeared on the mountain of transfiguration with Messiah in glory as they spoke of his exodus about to be accomplished in Jerusalem. In Psalm 45, here's a wonderful verse, verse 13. The royal daughter is all glorious within the palace. Her clothing is woven with gold. There's a world of meaning here. Who is the royal daughter? It is the one that is mentioned earlier on, verse 9. King's daughters are among your honorable women. At your right hand stands the queen in gold from Ophir. The queen redeemed Israel. And the king's daughters there are the redeemed nations. The word for queen in verse 9 is shegal in Hebrew. Shegal doesn't mean queen. Malka means queen. The word shegal means consort. When someone who is not of royal blood marries someone of royal blood, they are called the queen, the consort, prince consort, princess consort. And what the sacred writer is saying, we certainly stand at Messiah's right hand, but we are not of the royal blood. We do not have deity in us. We are consorts. We are redeemed from among men. We are not of that royal blood of heaven. Although now we are wedded to him who has that royal blood of heaven, our Messiah. At your right hand stands the consort in gold from Ophir. And that's what we have in verse 13. Her clothing is woven with gold. Mishbetzot Zahav. That's how it is in the Hebrew. Woven with gold thread. It's the language used of the priestly garments that Aaron and his sons wore. They were with Mishbetzot Zahav, with weaving of gold thread. And what it tells us is that the bride of Messiah is found in the most holy place. The most holy place where Aaron could not go except for once a year. And then he had to step out again after he had finished his ministry of offering the blood and the incense inside that veil. But we find the royal daughter is all glorious within. And pnima, the Hebrew word pnima, refers to the most holy place in the sanctuary. She's found there. She's not just stepping in and out. She's clothed with those priestly garments. So there she is in her royal character because she's married to the prince. She's also there in her priestly character because of her garments. It's a picture of the bride of Messiah in their high and holy calling as kings and priests to God. She's found in there. Why is she found there? If Aaron had dared to stay in, he would have died. He had to withdraw until the next year. She is there because her bridegroom is there. He is in the most holy place. We read in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 6. Hebrews 6, verse 17 onwards. Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, that is, his promise and his oath, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Yeshua, having become high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. Messiah, Yeshua, is in the most holy place. The veil has been torn. It was torn as he died on the tree. And now the way into the holiest of all is open and manifest, and we may come with boldness into the holiest of all. The royal daughter is all glorious within, in the most holy place. Her clothing is woven with gold. She's there because she has a right to be there, and her right to be there is because her bridegroom is there. That's the picture we have in Psalm 45. The psalm speaks about the royal bridegroom coming to receive his bride, but first of all, wreaking vengeance on his enemies. The first half of the psalm is a martial, has a martial tone to it, a military tone. But the second half is that of the wedding feast. We come back to our text, and with this we have to close for this week. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 4, when Messiah, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. In glory, you will be in the very presence of God. Well, what a wonderful truth that is. The second coming of Messiah. There's much that is said in the law, in the prophets, and in the writings. And perhaps, God willing, we should tarry and have a look at that next week to see what it means, the appearing of the Messiah, how it was foreshadowed, as it was, how it was prefigured in the Torah, in the Ketuvim, the writings, as it was prefigured and prophesied in the prophets, and then how it was confirmed and endorsed in the New Covenant scriptures. God willing, next week we're going to look at the second coming of Messiah throughout the scriptures, from Genesis right through to Malachi and into the New Covenant scriptures as well. May God bless his word to our hearts and comfort us and encourage us to look up, because that's where our salvation comes from. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence does my salvation come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth.